This is an MPB Think Radio podcast. The legal information presented on In Legal Terms is meant to provide general information about the topics discussed and is not necessarily the opinion of Mississippi Public Broadcasting. The information conveyed does not create any type of attorney-client relationship. Please consult an attorney provider before making any decisions about your specific legal questions.
Welcome to In Legal Terms from MPB Think Radio. It's the show all about you and your rights. I'm Liz Gill. I'm here with Professor Richard Gershon from the University of Mississippi School of Law. Hello, Professor Gershon. Thank you for joining us on your spring break. Is it your spring break?
You know, Liz, we're not having a spring break this year because we're trying to get everybody out of Oxford quickly so that when they can come back in the fall, we'll be fully open and in person, which would be great. So we're going straight through. And I have an 8 o'clock class, which means it was really 7 o'clock yesterday. And I think my students and I were both feeling it, but we're glad to be here and really happy to have Oxford attorney Gray Edmondson on the show this week. And, you know, our topic is tax considerations while working from home. But Gray is actually doing this, and we're grateful to him, while he is in Colorado on vacation. So really, it ought to be tax considerations while working from anywhere that we talk about today. And Gray, it's great to welcome you. Could you tell us a little bit about your background and how did you get interested in tax law?
Yeah, absolutely. I guess my interest in tax law started in law school. I think I would never have expected that would be the course I took. But you get in law school, you start taking courses and realize where you naturally fall, and that's what worked for me. Went from there to New York University to finish my tax program, and have been doing tax work since, and it's been great. Our practice is in Oxford. We do, you know, pretty much everything in the tax world: estate tax, income tax, trust and estate work, business transactions. The gamut for most of the routine estate and tax work that you need.
Well, and also you are, we appreciate you being an adjunct professor at the law school and teaching partnership tax, which is widely considered to be the hardest tax course that we offer. So we're grateful for that. And, you know, a lot of people are working at home during the pandemic, and that's really, you know, we're going to be talking about that today. But has your office been open, and have you and your firm been able to?
Yes, our office, as what was defined as an essential business during the early stages of the pandemic, we were allowed to stay open, but we chose for, you know, the safety of ourselves and our staff and clients to be closed during that early stage. But as things started to open up, we went through an initial sort of staggered approach to having not full office personnel in the office at any given time. And that worked really well and eventually worked into full-time everyone in the office probably in May or June of the summer, and have done that since. We're largely able to work without being in close contact with each other, and if we use care elsewhere, it works. Clients appreciate having us available. The big change for us, primarily other than ourselves, since we've been back in the office, has been handling client meetings and conferences and those types of events via teleconference, Zoom, other remote conferencing capabilities. And so a big part of my day has shifted from sitting in the conference room to sitting behind a computer looking at a video conference.
This morning, we're going to talk about the federal tax law. You can send us an email to our address, legalterms@mpbonline.org. I was a little nervous, Nelly, this year with all that the IRS has to do with the stimulus and tax returns. We already filed ours, already got our refund, but we hope listeners will call in if they haven't already started their tax return for 2020 or if they want to get a jump on their 2021 returns.
Exactly, Liz. And one thing, you know, that Gray will be talking about today, too, is not just their federal return, but also their state returns, because as people work in lots of different places now, that gets complicated. And so, Gray, I mean, do you think some of these changes that took place in the practice of law, that's, you know, for not so much for you, y'all were able to meet in person, but I know a lot of lawyers have been dealing more remotely with their clients, and courts have done so as well. Do you think some of these changes will become more permanent? That we'll see a lot more remote. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I think some will. I don't know that a lot of the practice of law will move to really remote practice of law full time. Clients still want to meet face to face. Courts still want to see the demeanor of witnesses. people still want to sit across the table from a deponent and feel their body language and the like. So I don't know that the law practice will move to fully remote, but the ability to do a lot of our work remotely will certainly open up a lot of the practice of law to not needing to travel as much and things like that. So I think it'll change the practice of law probably going into the future for as long as I'll be practicing law, I can imagine.
Well, you and I both spoke at a conference back in November, the Mid-South Estate Planning Conference in Memphis. And normally we would have, you know, you did that several years and I did it several years, and we would drive to Memphis and, you know, and people would come from other places as well to present and to watch the proceedings. But this year it was remote. This past year it was remote. And, you know, I was talking to the people who run our CLE programs, and they said, you know, that was a better way to do it. They didn't have to rent space. They didn't have to provide refreshments. And my impression, and I'll ask you, I mean, my impression was it went pretty well.
It really did. I was impressed by the event. I think attendance was up because people didn't have to travel to attend the event. And the cost of the event, as you pointed out, were down because of the avoidance of needing to rent space and the like. I attended a conference last week that was scheduled to be an in-person conference from people around the country, and it was held via Zoom. And everyone was really excited. The only thing we really felt that we missed was just in person, seeing the people you know face to face and shaking their hand and talking to them in breaks and those kind of things. But the content was great.
We have a call that we're going to get to because that's what we're doing for this show. We're giving you the opportunity to speak with a tax attorney to find out what the tax law is. So let's go to Wesley in Brookhaven. Wesley, thank you so much for calling in to In Legal Terms. What's your comment or question?
I'm wondering what is going on with the Mississippi state income tax that requires you to put a copy of your 1040 with it to send it in.
Yeah, well, Mississippi follows the federal tax treatment as a default term of Mississippi law. So where Mississippi law isn't different than the federal system, then it is the same as the federal tax laws. So Mississippi return, like a lot of states, is really a feeder return from what flows through your federal income tax return. So they need to see that in order to be able to properly review and examine that return.
Well, this is the first year that I've ever heard of them needing a copy of the 1040 from the federal.
Yeah, I don't know. I've seen a copy have to be submitted. It certainly feeds from the 1040 onto your state return in terms of the data. They have tried to roll out some new compliance programs because they've had a lack of compliance. I'm not really sure what's going on with this particular decision, but you know, I guess if they're requiring it, it's something we're going to have to do.
Hey, Gray, I file electronically, and I think most taxpayers now are filing electronically. I guess that just happens automatically.
That's right. Well, and of course, 1040 for most individuals is required to be e-filed now. A few years ago, the IRS went to mandatory e-filing.
Well, I'm not going to. Mississippi requires you to pay if you e-file, so I'm not having any of that. I e-file my federal, then just print off my Mississippi, then stick a forever stamp on it. We've got another call. We're going to go to Sue in Beaumont. Wesley, thank you for calling in. Sue from Beaumont, what's your comment or question about the tax law with our guest, Gray Edmondson?
Well, hi, Mr. Edmondson. I'd like to ask a question. I've called several tax repair companies, and I keep asking, are these stimulus checks considered taxable income? And I can't get the same answer from anybody. So do you have to claim that on your income tax or whatever? Are they considered taxable income?
I think the answer is no. They're not going to be taxable income. That's been the decision that's made. Where you've probably gotten a lot of variable answers is early on in the process. There was a lot of question about the tax consequences of some of the different programs the IRS was rolling out, or the SBA and other programs, especially for businesses, and what were the tax consequences there. And the tax professional community, as well as the other folks that were involved in administering these programs, couldn't answer those questions. And so we've finally gotten some answers and feel comfortable that that's not taxable.
Oh, great. Thank you.
Thank you, Sue.
And, you know, Gray, I think one part of that confusion was the extension of unemployment benefits, for example.
Right.
And unemployment benefits are typically taxable, and then the stimulus checks were separate from that. And I think that, you know, they're just different checks coming in, and people, I think, are confused. And so,
Well, that's right. We had a big deal about the deduction of PPP expenses that, that came up with. There's just been a lot of things that, that have caused frustration.
This is the last pandemic in all of our lifetimes, I hope. And so this is the last time we have to deal with any of this stuff.
You can send us an email to our address, legalterms@mpbonline.org. We're discussing federal tax law with our guest, tax attorney Gray Edmondson. Now, you can't trust everything on social media, but if it's directly from the IRS, you can. We're going to share some tweets of theirs this show. You're listening to In Legal Terms on MPB Think Radio.
Hi, I'm Ryder Taff, Portfolio Manager at New Perspectives, a fee-only financial advisory and co-host of Money Talks. Each week, we take your personal finance questions and tell you about a money topic we hope you find helpful. Money Talks can be heard Tuesdays at 9 a.m. on MPB Think Radio. Podcasts can be found on our website, money.mpbonline.org, or on your smart device's podcasting platform.
This is In Legal Terms. Not everyone has a chance to listen to our whole show live, so if you've missed any of our program, you can listen to the whole show at inlegalterms.mpbonline.org. It's also available on the MPB Public Media app, as are all our local shows. I'm Liz Gill. I'm here with Professor Richard Gershon from the University of Mississippi School of Law at IRS News has a pinned tweet to their account. IRS is delivering a third round of economic impact statements. Most qualified Americans will receive a payment without taking any action. They also tweeted, eligible people missing the first or second economic impact payment can claim it when they file their 2020 taxes. And in fact, we did this in our family. My 25-year-old was a dependent in 2019, but became independent in 2020, so she didn't get the stimulus in August and December when everybody else did. But when we filed her 2020, we filed their 2020 taxes, they were not a dependent, and at the bottom of the form, it let us it gave the availability of the economic impact payment. So that's my personal, not the tax lawyer's information. That's my situation. But go ahead, Richard.
I was going to say that came out as a tax credit. And
yes.
So if you haven't, that's really, really important to take that tax credit. If you didn't get the stimulus check last year and you were in that situation, we have a lot of graduating college students who are in that position. So sorry.
Exactly. No, their situation was. One more tweet, and then, Gray, I'll let you comment. If you don't get your W-2 form, do your taxes on time anyway using IRS Form 4852. This morning, we are talking about taxes with tax attorney Gray Edmondson. Gray, what did you want to say?
I was just going to hop in real quick and jump on Richard's comment about a credit, and that's important for people to understand because of the difference in a credit and under deduction for these purposes. A deduction, you have to have income to offset a credit. A credit can be what's called a refundable credit, which means even if you don't have income, if you file your return, the IRS will write you a check for that credit. So a lot of these benefits programs that are out there, some stimulus money is in the form of a refundable credit. So some people will need to be sure they understand that difference.
Fantastic. And we've got some phone calls to get to. Let's hear what Jim from Jackson has to say. Jim, what's your question about the tax law for our guest attorney, Gray Edmondson?
Good morning. I think without a doubt that we're going to see some increase in taxes to pay for all this stimulus program funding. How likely is it that any increase in taxes would be retroactive back to the 1st of January 2020, or is it more likely to be effective with the next tax?
Well, there's been a real big question that's raised for years, anytime, especially we have changes in presidential administrations, where what can you do retroactively? And the law seems pretty clear that you can have retroactive tax changes. It's allowed. The talk is that from the Biden administration, his best word on the street here we hear is that they are not intending to make retroactive tax changes, but that they will probably make any changes they make. I say any. A number of the changes they make will be effective the date of enactment of whatever bill. So if they get a bill through in the summer, it may be effective that date. Some other things may be effective January 1st of next year. So I think we all probably owe it to ourselves to keep an eye on what's happening and what effective date's going to be, because as we see things pushing through, if we need to make a change in our personal planning before an effective date kicks in, that's your window of opportunity.
Those capital assets before that effective date.
If the change that would be effective on that date is an increase in capital gains rates for you, which the talk is that it is an increase in capital gains rates, but the current discussion is around individuals with incomes over $1 million, where that gets eliminated in terms of the current capital gains rate preference. So there's going to be a limited number of taxpayers that really need to watch that. But everyone needs to be paying attention, because we just don't know. And we can speculate. But once Congress does their thing, what comes out the backside of that process is not always what we predicted going in.
Well, if it's $1 million, I'm very safe.
Well, me too.
Thank you, Jim. We appreciate you calling in. Let's go next to Sherry in Batesville. Sherry, thank you for calling in to In Legal Terms today with our guest tax attorney, Gray Edmondson. What's your question about tax law?
I have already filed my 2020 return in February, and due to a disability back pay settlement in that year, I was required to pay back over $6,000 in health care tax credits. Now, I understand that part of the new stimulus package is a forgiveness of those tax credits that were owed for 2020. Do I need to amend my return? Will the IRS look at my return and send me my money back? What do I need to do?
I think from my perspective, I would certainly talk to your tax professional who filed that return. Anytime you have, and it happens, especially with early filers, which I would call February an early filer, you file your return and something, you get a new piece of information, a new 1099, or you end up, like you said, having to pay something back that you may have claimed as income that you need to then go and amend and reduce your income, take a credit or a deduction against income you find out about later. So it's probably likely you're going to need to amend the return, but you know, everybody's individual return is so different. You probably need to talk to who prepared that return and get their input.
Okay, so they won't actually look at my return and say, oh, this is the forgiveness, and just send me a check.
Well, no, they probably will not do that.
All right, that's what I was hoping for. All right, that's answered my question. Thank you so much.
I can't say for sure. I don't know exactly what program would offer you a refundable credit automatically there, so it's possible, but you'd want to have that looked at.
Well, in the package, I read some of the package things that were included in the package, and one of those was the forgiveness of health care tax credits for 2020. So that gave me a little. In fact, my CPA is the one that called me and made me aware of that. So I was just wanting to see if, you know, if we probably needed to file an amended return. And that's, what, a 1040X?
That's right.
Okay. Thanks for your help.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Sherry. We appreciate you calling in. I'll also be checking our emails, which we may get to on the show, or we may forward them to our guest, tax attorney Gray Edmondson, and he can answer them after the show for us.
Gray, one of the things, you know, the question about changes to the tax law, that's nothing new. I remember when the tax code was changed in 1986, and I remember President Reagan saying, this will do it. We won't have to make changes from this point forward. And of course, they made changes the next year and the year after that, and we've been having changes ever since then. So the tax law is kind of always changing as Congress sees different programs, different things that they want to support. Depends on who's on, in office, as you mentioned. It keeps things interesting for you and me, certainly,
right.
You know, as tax people. But so, you know, that's not unusual, and I do think it's important for people to keep an eye on the things that will affect them. And so that's why I'm glad you're here. I'm glad to talk about this today. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, working from home. You know, people in the pandemic have had to work from home in some cases. If they've been fortunate enough to have jobs that they could do from home, I always worry about people who don't. So what are some of the tax considerations you've seen for that were unique to people working from home during this time?
Right, there are any number of questions that come up, and it's important to note that, you know, we're talking about this as working from home, which is what has happened with a lot of folks. But some people have worked remotely otherwise, have gone to move in with a child to take care of a grandchild and work remotely from there, have gone to a family cabin somewhere and worked from that location. And so, you know, a lot of the things we'll discuss are working from home related specifically, but some others are just remote working issues in general. And so what I see that's come up early, especially in the pandemic, but it's going to play itself out in 2020 return filings, is what can I do about the costs associated with working from home? Have I had to buy new computer network equipment that's fast enough to have remote video conferencing? Have I had to chosen to buy a new printer or scanner, a new desk for home, things like that? Those are a lot of questions that have come up, because you think generally most people have an idea, if I'm spending money for work, that should be deductible, that should offset my income. And we used to have a deduction with some benchmarks in there that you didn't get the full benefit, but you got some benefit of unreimbursed business expenses for employees. That, as part of a tax act, talking about changes all the time, and it passed in 2018, was eliminated. So we no longer have that, what's called a miscellaneous itemized deduction available. And so those type of expenses, if you are an employee who works for an employer and gets a W-2, are no longer deductible. And that's going to affect folks.
So that's, yeah, it does make a difference then, whether you are an employee or an independent contractor, you know, or self-employed. How do you determine whether somebody is an employee or self-employed? You know, some people work. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Right. Yeah. That's a big question, and it comes up very often. And the reason that makes a difference to that point is employees don't get that deduction. But if you're an independent contractor, you're viewed as being business for yourself, not for someone else. And so that now becomes a deduction of your operating business, even if it doesn't file its own return. Right. If it files on your 1040. And so the way you sort of tell and the reason I use the term work for yourself instead of someone else is there are a number of very detailed tests that you go through to sort of analyze. There's not a bright line rule. But the crux of that comes back to, are you in business for yourself versus someone else? Do you have your own business cards? Do you have a business phone number? Do you have a business web address? When you're working for one individual or business, can you work for others at the same time doing the same work? Or is that where you clock in from 8 to 5 and they expect you to dedicate your full-time working efforts to them? Do they provide the tools you need to work, or do you go buy those for yourself because you're in business for yourself? And so as you work down, does it look more like I'm running my own business where I go out and solicit work and handle it and bill it and collect it and do those things versus am I working for someone else? And the tax form you get is a W-2 when you're an employee and a 1099 when you're an independent contractor. So part of the way you can tell is what reporting form you get. Now, you can work with whoever you're performing services for to convert that status and say, I'd really like to start working for myself as a contractor and billing you that way. You will have to change your working arrangements. You'll have to start covering some of your own expenses, some of your own employment taxes, and doing some things like that. But if the facts hold up to that arrangement, then there may be reasons to go one way versus the other.
It's interesting because there was a big, obviously, controversy in California about Uber drivers, for example. Are they independent contractors? Are they employees? And some of them wanted to be employees, and some of them wanted to be independent contractors. And I don't know that that ever will be completely resolved. So, you know, it's not always that easy.
That's right. And there are a lot of people who believe incorrectly. And I see this more with on the employer side, that you just ask someone when they come to work for you which they would rather be. And you just report that way. Really, the facts of what is going on is what drives that determination, not what someone may prefer. And so you can certainly change the arrangement to meet what you may prefer, but you can't just decide which you would rather, which treatment you'd rather have.
Email us your questions. The address is legalterms@mpbonline.org. We're talking with tax attorney Gray Edmondson about our 2020 tax situation. If you want some nuggets of tax tips each day, consider following @IRSNews on Twitter. We're going to share some of that information with you next. You're listening to In Legal Terms on MPB Think Radio.
Allison Walker, the Lady Auto Mechanic, host of AutoCorrect. If you're enjoying this podcast, try my podcast, AutoCorrect. We help steer you in the right direction with your car problems. Find me on any podcast platform or at autocorrect.mpbonline.org.
Hey there, it's David Green. You know, there comes a time when you've just got to let go of that old vehicle. Maybe it has lots of great memories, but it's also maybe just taking up space. And selling it can be such a hassle. So here's one thought. Let this station take that vehicle off your hands. Proceeds from the sale benefit this station, and you could get a tax break. Thanks.
Donate your car, motorcycle, boat, or RV by going to mpbonline.org.
You're listening to In Legal Terms on MPB Think Radio. Professor Richard Gershon is our expert host. I'm Liz Gill. We do hope you'll subscribe to our podcast. Lots of different podcasting platforms. My husband likes Stitcher. I like Podcast Addict. We're not Apple people, but Apple devices come with their own podcasting platform. You just download one to your phone. You can touch a plus that takes you to a page to search for podcasts. I typed in Legal Terms in the search area. It brought up our In Legal Terms. We're the only one that's called that. And I'm able to touch the photo of it and subscribe. And that way I'm notified when any new episodes are loaded up. This morning, we are talking about the federal tax law, specifically concerning working from home individuals, with our guest, attorney Gray Edmondson from Edmondson Sage Allen. @IRSNews has some great tweets to give you information or to remind you of current tax laws, such as taxpayers of all ages may be able to claim a deduction on their 2020 tax return for contributions to their IRAs made through April 15th of 2021. Teachers, some out-of-pocket expenses to protect your classroom from COVID-19 may qualify for the educator expense deduction. And another tweet is, staying safe at home filing this season. IRS reminds you that there are still ways to do your taxes for free online or with help from volunteers. We've got some calls to go to this morning. Let's start with Bill in Gulfport. Bill, thank you so much for calling in Legal Terms today to speak with our tax expert, Gray Edmondson. What's your comment or question about tax law?
Well, first, thank you for making me smarter than I am. I have been retired, living in Mississippi for the past 10 years with no W-2 income. all at once this year when I filed my 2020 tax return. They want me to pay the state an additional $1,500 that I owe. For 10 years, I've owed no tax, and there's nothing changed. The only income I have is retirement income and interest income. So has a law changed in Mississippi somewhat that makes something taxable that I didn't know about?
From what you're describing, I don't know about any law change that you've mentioned. The one thing that does stand out is retirement income in Mississippi is exempt from state income tax, but your interest income may not be. And so it sounds like what they may have received is a 1099 or some other informational return that they've now matched up and said you should have been paying this, you know, previously, and you weren't, and so we're trying to collect. I mean, you know, Richard, I don't know if you have any other thoughts, but that's what strikes me as a possibility. But these are so individual circumstances on what reporting you're getting, but that's what stands out as a possibility.
Yeah, I think that's right, Gray. I think a lot of times we forget that, you know, the Department of Revenue here and the Internal Revenue Service are just people. And there are a lot more taxpayers than there are people working for those departments. And a lot of times I think they don't, you know about a situation until years afterwards. And that may be what happened. They finally found out maybe you should have been paying interest or tax on the interest, as best I can guess.
Yeah. And you hear lots of times people say things like, well, I've been doing it this way for years and it's never been a problem. Why is it suddenly a problem this year? And that's to Richard's point. It's not that it wasn't. It's that they just didn't notice it. Their systems didn't catch it until now. So
go back lots of times arbitrarily and pick up something that they had overlooked before. And
they can, as long as the statute of limitations is open.
What is the statute of limitations for taxes?
There's a general 3-year statute of limitations, but that statute of limitations starts from the filing of your return. So if you, for example, don't file a return, then it never starts. It can be a longer statute if you have what's called a substantial understatement of your income or a substantial omission of an item, and those are defined in the tax code of what those mean. But if you know, really, it's 3 years if you file a return, and forever if you don't, effectively.
Well, Bill, we'll have information. If you have access to a website or a smartphone with this show, we will put some information about maybe volunteer tax assistance. I think AARP usually helps out some people each time. So if you do need someone to assist you, they're a great group to contact, and we'll also try to have some links on our show. Thank you so much, Bill, for calling in. We're now going to go to John in Grenada. John, thank you for calling in to In Legal Terms today. What's your comment or question about tax law?
Good morning. I don't really have a tax question exactly. It's related to the second stimulus check last year. I never got it. I got the first one this time last year. I never got the second one, and now they're working on the third one. And you cannot call the IRS. I envision a little old lady sitting in the basement somewhere, and she answers 5 calls a day, and there's like 1 million calls coming in. So you can't talk to anybody. So I was just curious. Do I just wait and hope for the best, or is there somebody or something I can do?
Yeah, I can't pretend to know the answer on that exactly, because there have been a lot of people, especially with these third round of stimulus checks that are supposed to be coming out, that a lot of folks have had a hard time with it. That's a common thing, and I'm not sure what goes on behind the curtain necessarily, but it's been something that it's a known issue, and I know they're working to address it because a number of people have had that issue. That said, as you follow the news and follow your friends and family and those kind of things, is the others out there that might not have already gotten their third check, if they all start too and you don't, then at some point, yes, you ought to look into it. You don't want to leave those available funds, you know, sitting out there.
Well, how do I do that? How do you contact somebody that won't answer the phone?
Well, sometimes you have to keep calling and calling and just deal with it. And it's unfortunate, but most of these stimulus programs have hotlines and numbers. If you Google around, you can find local offices where they have someone to contact local offices. They have phone numbers you can call to deal with your questions. And to your point, so many people are calling right now because so many people are missing that check that you, understandably, you're having a hard time getting in.
John, we will have information on this show, the IRS's webpage for Get My Stimulus. I'm not quite sure what it is. We'll mention it later on in the show. But as I told my anecdotal story when I filed, when my child filed their tax return, they hadn't gotten the stimulus check, and they got it as a credit on filing an income tax return. Maybe that will help you. Gray, what were you going to say?
No, I was just going to say that you know, the overwhelming, the system right now is probably a product of so many people not getting that third check timely, and so they're all overwhelming the system. So as they start to get those checks and those calls drop off, you know, those stragglers who haven't are probably going to have a lot better time getting through, I assume. Again, I don't know what happens behind the curtain, but that seems to me a fair assumption.
And John, the web address for the IRS is irs.gov, and it's called Get My Payment. And if you go through that rabbit hole, that might help you find out if you were entitled to it, if because they did change some of the requirements. That might help you. Or if you do file an informational return or something, then you might be able to get a credit that way, as we've mentioned. And good luck to you, John. We hope that you are able to get what is due you. We're going to go to Stephen in Hattiesburg now. Stephen, thank you so much for calling into In Legal Terms. What is your comment or question for our guest, tax attorney Gray Edmondson, about the tax law?
Thanks. I have a more general tax question. We have a family business. We've had it for about 10 years, and it involves providing wardrobe for movies and TV productions, mostly out of Atlanta, but we're in Mississippi. And most of the income is through rentals to movies and TV productions, and occasionally sales. But we've been approached by a possible buyer who wants to maybe buy out the entire inventory of wardrobe for several hundred thousand dollars. And normal sales in a normal year would be treated as income, and it's a family business. It's not been incorporated. And I'm thinking that if we were to sell out the entire inventory, there could be a significant tax impact if it's treated as normal income, like sales would be regularly. But it would be much better if it could be treated as capital gain. So I'm wondering if it can be treated as capital gain when you sell the entire inventory, and if there's anything special we need to do in order for that to happen.
I'd say possibly, you know, is the answer. You know, and the reason I say possibly is if you're selling inventory, essentially equipment, you know, these costumes that you've probably taken deductions for, that part, that amount of any sale will be probably subject to ordinary income tax, what's called depreciation recapture, if you depreciated or wrote it off under Section 179 or bonus depreciation that allows you to do that. That said, if you're selling a going concern, an operating business, and you're selling the name of the business and the goodwill and reputation of the business behind those hard assets, part of the purchase price is going to be for that intangible value that attaches to just the good name and trade name and value of the business that's tied up in that. And that portion of the sale will be taxed at capital gains rates generally. So you really have to work through the process of determining how much of your purchase price is properly allocable to one type of asset you're selling versus another. And really that kind of takes a tax professional to help you walk through that analysis. But that can help tax a good portion of the sale as capital gains versus ordinary income.
Okay, thank you for that. So be sure we sell the name and the goodwill along with the inventory.
And allocate as much of the purchase price that is reasonable to that asset versus the inventory.
Okay. Thank you for that.
Thank you, Stephen.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting, Gray. I mean, you know, we're talking about working from home, but people are still, you know, conducting business. And as Stephen pointed out, you know, that they're, you know, the business, the film industry, I'm surprised that actually there will be Academy Awards this year. So you got to give people credit. We've been creative during this time of COVID, and a lot has happened. But one thing we'll talk about maybe in the next segment is, what about people who are working from home, but their business is in another state? And I think maybe that's
been a big issue through this pandemic, is people working in states different than where they normally go to work before. And that could be because they own a business. We live in North Mississippi. People own and work for businesses in Tennessee and commute from Mississippi every day. And they may have started working from a home office in Mississippi this year, or they may have moved in with a child to help take care of grandkids, or they may, like I said, may have moved to a family cabin and be working. And that raises a lot of state income tax issues.
Well, we have a couple more calls, but we are running out of time, folks. We'll also take your questions to our email address, legalterms@mpbonline.org. You never know what information you might need in the future. I love having little tips that I can just refer back to. I've got a source of reputable tax tips I'll share with you next. This is In Legal Terms on MPB Think Radio.
This podcast is a local production of Mississippi Public Broadcasting and depends on the support of listeners like you. If you can, please donate today at mpbonline.org. And thanks.
Thank you for being part of In Legal Terms. If you've missed any of our program, you can listen to the whole show. InLegalTerms.mpbonline.org. It's also available on the MPB Public Media app, as are all our local shows, or find it as a podcast on your favorite podcasting platform. I'm Liz Gill, here with Professor Richard Gershon from the University of Mississippi School of Law. At 11 a.m. Central on Tuesdays, following our show, you can hear Southern Remedy, Relatively Speaking, with Dr. Susan Buttress on MPB Think Radio. Mississippians are very generous and caring. At IRS News tweeted, forming a group that qualifies as a Section 501c4 social welfare organization, you must submit IRS Form 8976, Notice of Intent to Operate Under Section 501c4, no later than 60 days after formation. Another tweet, want your refund faster? Combining IRS e-file with direct deposit is the fastest way to get your tax refund. They also have another tweet where a cute puppy ate the tax return to illustrate why it's beneficial to e-file. I think puppy tweets get the biggest clicks. And also, if you're looking for a job, a number of tweets say, did you know IRS is hiring? Follow at Recruitment IRS to see what career opportunities await you. And they also have a website, jobs.irs.gov. We are talking with a tax attorney, Gray Edmondson, from Edmondson Sage Allen in Oxford. We have a couple of calls. We also had a phone number, or we had a caller who couldn't stay on. I had mentioned the August and the December payments. That was the $1,200 payment from August and the $600 stimulus check that some people got in December or January. That made up to $1,800 that when my child filed their return, that was the credit on their 2020 tax return that they received because they did not get it in the mail or through direct deposit during the 2020 year. We do have a couple of calls. We're going to go to Sandra in Water Valley. Sandra, thank you so much for calling into In Legal Terms. What's your comment or question about the tax law?
Good morning. Yes. Do you have to file on your Social Security benefits? This is my first year, and I received a form SSA 1099. And I called the Social Security office, and they weren't able to answer that question.
You do owe federal income tax on your Social Security income. And so, you know, depending on what your level of income is, you may have a filing obligation, but you have to look at those thresholds to determine whether you truly have a filing obligation.
Do you know what that money amount is? What is the minimum?
Not off the top of my head. It changes from year to year. There's an inflation-adjusted number. And of course, it's going to depend not only on your Social Security income, but any other sources of income you may have. If you have some pension income or some interest income or dividends from anything you may own, or even if you have money in an interest-bearing checking account, you know, what that generates. So there's other income and deductions and credits you probably have out there.
Okay. The other question is about unemployment benefits. Are those taxable?
Generally, yes.
Okay, so the unemployment stimulus, we would need to file that?
Yes, and some of the stimulus checks are, some of the stimulus checks you can get are going to be not taxable income, but traditionally, depending on what type of unemployment income you've received, is taxable. And so you do need to be sure and file. You know, it sounds like probably if you've had Social Security income, unemployment income, you may have some refundable credits you apply, you know, you would qualify for that would really mitigate in favor of filing return anyway. It probably makes sense to look at getting that done. And it may be after you run it up the flagpole and do the, you know, software, whoever you would take it to, it's not necessary. But I would certainly take your individual numbers and run it through that process.
Okay. And are we still under the $12,000 standard deduction?
That standard deduction has doubled as part of the 2018 Tax Act. So it's, you know, $24,000 and some change generally for married couples, and $12,000 or $12,000, you know, per individual. Well, that doubled to $24,000. So I think, you know, you probably, that's why I say, if you may have deductions that are going to be substantial enough through the doubling of the standard deduction, that's just going to mean you don't owe tax. But you need to look at those numbers and find out.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Sandra. We appreciate it. Ella from Memphis, I'm sorry we can't get to you. Our show is just about over, but we would love for you to send us an email. Our email address is legalterms@mpbonline.org. Gray, you have 30 seconds. What little tidbit can you leave us with?
Well, I think really the tidbit, and a couple of people have asked questions that have sort of resulted in this answer, is there's so much going on from this past year that may have to do with refundable credits, may have to do with taxable versus non-taxable stimulus versus unemployment benefits. You may have worked in multiple states, or you may have stayed and worked in your home state when you normally commute. So there's so much going on. I think the idea this year is a lot more people need to go see their tax professional.
Thank you. That's it. Gray Edmondson from Edmondson Sage Allen in Oxford. Thank you for Professor Richard Gershon, who hosts usually from the University of Mississippi School of Law. Thanks to Jay White and Michelle McAdoo for being our show engineers today. We hope that you will join us next Tuesday at 10 a.m. for In Legal Terms on mpbonline.org.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast.